This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 8, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York. Let's get right to the good stuff. The Braves, the Nationals, Ozzie Albies having a terrific season.
3-1. Swung on and hit well to deep left center field. This is heading back towards the seats. And that one is gone. Ozzie has homered in four straight games, and he does it here in the bottom of the seventh inning to put the Braves back in front. It's now 7-5 Atlanta.
They would hold that lead and win 8-5 over Washington. That sound from 680 The Fan. The Phillies blew out the Brewers 10-0. The Mets played the Marlins, and Pete Alonso had himself a night.
2-1. Alonso drills one in the air, deep to left field. This one's going a long way. Home run, Pete Alonso. He hit it above the old Clevelander down there on the left field side at Lone Depot Park. Alonso didn't wait long after hitting number 100 earlier. He gets number 101.
That from WCBS. As we start play Wednesday, the Braves have a 2.5 game lead over the Phillies, and they're 4 games ahead of the Mets. Before that Mets game yesterday, Sandy Alderson, the team president, talked about Jacob deGrom's situation with his elbow. Here's Sandy.
Which ligament?
His right elbow. We're talking about UCL.
UCL, okay. Yeah. So we know partial tear of his UCL then.
Yeah, but look, somebody goes out with a headline that it's a partial tear.
Right.
That's what, you know, a bruise is. A bruise is a partial tear of the muscle, okay? So don't, you know, let's not go out there and write as if this is anything new. It's not.
Sure.
Okay? And it's a very low-grade thing that has resolved itself.
So I'm going to ask Stefania Bell, I need to, our ESPN's injury expert, about what Sandy Alderson told reporters yesterday about the Grom's elbow situation, because I got to say, as someone who covered the sport for a long time, it didn't make any sense to me. We'll see what Stefania has to say. Sandy also talked about interim general manager Zach Scott, who got hit with a DWI last week. Sandy indicating that he hasn't had any conversation with him.
Well, it's incredibly unfortunate, and I'm personally sort of chagrined by the whole thing. To a large extent, they're unrelated, each one of them. And I'm not sure that it points to a single flaw in our hiring process, but it's obviously caused us to take a hard look at it, which we continue to do. So, each one of those cases was a little bit different.
He was talking about, of course, Jared Porter, who was initially hired to be general manager, but then was banned from the sport for sexual harassment before Zach Scott stepped into that role. First Pitch is part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Cleveland Indians manager Terry Francona is resting comfortably after having his second operation 3 months, this on a toe. The Rays played the Red Sox. Nelson Cruz had himself a night.
So the pitch is launched to left. Back on it is Verdugo. He's going to have to play this one off the top. It's gone. It just kept it started to rise some more, and it's out of here. That was a line drive that just kept getting higher. And I think in Cruz's case right there, he was lucky enough that he hit it toward the gap because it gave it a little extra time to keep rising. That's incredible. That's another homer for Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, from 620 WDA, Tampa Bay led 12-1 at one point. They win this game 12-7. During the game, Rays rookie Wander Franco went 0-for-4 with a walk, extending his on-base streak to 37 games and passing Mickey Mantle for the longest streak by an AL player under 21 years old. Paul Hembekides will join us to talk about Wander Franco. The Blue Jays, game two of their series against the Yankees, and there was a scary moment for New York in the fourth.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh. They're taking Cole out of the game, and you don't take your best pitcher in a game that you really have to win out of the game unless there's something wrong. Would you agree with that, Ms. Waldman?
I agree with that. Did he look at his hand? We'll have to see it again. And oh, my goodness.
That was John Sterling, Susan Waldman on WFAN. After the Blue Jays' 5-1 win over the Yankees, Yankees manager Aaron Boone provided a bit of optimism for his team in his postgame availability, saying there's no MRI scheduled for Cole's hamstring and that the Yankees feel like they caught onto the issue early before it got really serious. At the end of the day, the Blue Jays now 2 games behind the Red Sox for the second wild card, 2.5 games behind the Yankees. Seattle, just 1 game behind Toronto. The coolest moment last night may have happened in St. Louis when Albert Pujols stepped into the box, and after a standing ovation, this happened.
He hooks this one in the air to deep left field. Albert Pujols in St. Louis again. You can't write this stuff. Number 679 of Albert Pujols' career. The machine. Back at Busch. Homers in his first at-bat.
So cool. The Dodgers win the game 7-2. Someday, Albert Pujols will be voted in the Hall of Fame unanimously, you would think, and he'll join Derek Jeter, who will be inducted today.
All righty, Buster, before we move on here, 2 things to note. First of all, don't forget, the ESPN College Football Podcast is now 5 days a week. Week 1 is in the books. Hosts Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollack, Kevin Nagandi, Reese Davis, Matt Berry, Paul Feinbaum, Booger McFarland, and Joey Galloway are all joining forces, a different pairing every day of the week, reacting to week 1, looking ahead to week 2. We got it all on the ESPN College Football Podcast. Listen, follow, rate, review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please don't forget, we've got a new 30 for 30 podcast out with The Undefeated. It is The King of Crenshaw. This 4-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, particularly the NBA. Hear DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, DeMarcus Cousins, among others, explore the realities of life as a black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. The King of Crenshaw. Listen now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Stefania Bell is ESPN's injury expert. And Stefania, I knew when I saw last night what Sandy Alderson said that I would need your counsel. Okay. For me as a reporter who's talked to a lot of executives through the years and understand that they're not obligated to tell us exactly what they know, I put what Sandy said in the category of, and I'll say this politely, strategic deception, because it didn't make any sense to me. But you're the expert. What did you think about what he said?
As always, it's the word choice that leaves you a little bit flabbergasted at times with why some people say certain things that you know are going to provoke a reaction. And I think when it comes to ulnar collateral ligament injuries, and Buster, we've talked about this for years, we know that there's so much nuance to these things. So let's take it for what it is, a sprained UCL for DeGrom. Okay, a sprain is a partial tear of a ligament. It means that when they imaged his elbow, they saw something, increased signal on the MRI, something that suggested a tear. Sometimes you can visualize the tear in there. And then they opted to treat it conservatively, which is, as we've seen with other pitchers, there has been success in that route. Sometimes it's a PRP injection. It's definitely shutting down from throwing for multiple weeks. And then you hope that over that period of time, there's been a calming down of the inflammation, maybe some scarring that's happened. And then functionally, you hope that the pitcher can go forward and proceed to throw if that's what they desire to do. And we know that it goes one of two ways. They can and they're successful, like Tanaka, or they can't and they end up going to complete failure. They just functionally can't throw and they require Tommy John surgery. I don't think we ever tried to describe the exact nature of the ligament because I don't think that on the medical side, we think that's really feasible. And I think that's where this notion that the ligament is 100% intact. How do we know that for sure? I don't think we do. You know, and here's the thing. Let's say DeGrom comes back and tries to throw and can't. You know, he can't do what he used to do. His velocity is down. He's uncomfortable. He can't, his command is off. Then you've really set him up for failure because you've essentially said, hey, the ligament's fine. Whatever was there before is resolved. And maybe you're trying to spin it positively to inspire the confidence in your pitcher. Like, we know we're doing the right thing, but it's just a dangerous line to walk, in my humble opinion.
That word resolved. That one really got me. Like, what does that mean? Resolved?
Well, in medicine, we use that word a fair amount, but usually we're talking about the condition in the sense of, you know, the overall condition. So, you might say, you know, that, you know, this is sort of the episode is resolved. Okay. So the episode of inflammation and lack of functionality, you know, not being able to throw, et cetera. You might say the episode appears to have fully resolved. He's got no complaints. You know, he's able to throw some. So we're going to go ahead and move forward with this plan that he's going to return to the mound. That you would say when it comes to detailing the nature of the ligament. Again, I think it's just dangerous ground.
You know, it's interesting. I know I've talked to baseball executives who are really curious as DeGrom moves forward is whether or not there's some adjustment on his side with his velocity, because part of the reason why he was the greatest pitcher that we've ever seen this year before he got hurt was he was throwing harder than any starting pitcher that we've ever seen. And baseball executives I've spoken with who don't know what's in the medical information, but they've wondered about that connection between him throwing absolutely as hard as he can on every pitch and whether or not there'll be something to dial back. Any sort of, do you have a similar curiosity?
Yeah, I do, because one thing we're going to look at is his velocity and whether it's purposeful or whether it's where he is physically at this point after having this episode with his elbow. I don't know that we'll know the answer to that, or maybe we won't know till after the season. But again, we always look at the seasonal calendar with these things. So if his symptoms have resolved, to use that word, and he is able to throw and be effective, why not attempt a conservative, you know, why not attempt a comeback to finish out the season? Because should something go amiss, should he find out he can't throw, should he find out he can't continue, you really haven't impacted his overall calendar in terms of recovery should he ultimately need Tommy John surgery.
Right. And the Mets can make their plans one way or the other for 2022 and what their staff's going to look like. Before you go, I want to ask you about Fernando Tatis Jr. He did an interview earlier this week in which he basically said, you know, that his shoulder, he doesn't think he's going to have surgery on it going forward. And then he walked those comments back, and speaking with reporters who cover the Padres yesterday, speaking with executives who've had players with shoulder injuries like this, they've assumed all summer that at some point he's going to need some kind of procedure to tighten up that shoulder. What was your read on that?
Yeah, I think if you look at every medical person who's commented on the situation from the outside, we all just kind of hold our breaths every time he goes down with another episode, because the nature of these injuries is that each progressive episode tends to worsen the condition, right? You know, when your shoulder is slipping out of place, you're putting enormous stretch on the tissues that protect the shoulder. And at some point, that resilience doesn't exist anymore. The shoulder becomes more lax. You're more prone to subluxation or complete dislocation episodes. And then you start to traumatize the joint and break it down. So it is a progressive condition. What's been remarkable is how he's come back each time and been able to really overcome the things he did that put him at risk for the most part, like swinging the bat two-handed so he didn't go into that extreme end range where his shoulder was vulnerable. But where you see the problem is on the things that you can't fully anticipate. You know, the slides where his arm gets a little bit out of position, a little bit behind him. You know, defensive plays where maybe he's going to get his shoulder just overstretched in the wrong direction. I get that the player doesn't necessarily want to think about surgery because what he sees is, I'm fine. I do this. I might miss a few days, but I come back and I can still perform at the top of my game. So why would I want to go into something that's not a zero risk situation? Anytime you operate, risk of infection, maybe it, your recovery, you don't feel like you get back to what you were. I mean, those are all real things. So it's important that he does have the conversation with all of his people. It's important that he's involved in the decision, which I think were the words that he used as well. But at some point, there'll be a point of, minimal return where he's going to feel like he does need to have it. And the conversation they're likely to have is about the timing, because that's why you say the executives assume it'll happen at the end of the season. Well, that makes sense, right? Because then you would have the ample recovery time before the season starts. And remember the start of this season, we were all like, wow, this is happening at the beginning of the year. I didn't think he'd make it through the season. I'm blown away by the fact that he has. But like I said, at some point, diminishing returns. And I see the surgery in his future. When it happens, that, I guess, remains to be seen.
Stefani, it was great to catch up. I'm so glad that you answered these questions for me, because I'm certainly not qualified to. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Buster. It's always a treat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield, who covers baseball for ESPN. And I know last night you had your eyes, Dave, on the race for the second wild card. Blake Snell throwing so well, but the Padres losing again.
Yeah, I was up late watching that game. Unbelievably dominant through six innings, six perfect innings. He'd thrown 66 pitches, 51 strikes, 10 strikeouts, and because he was efficient, which isn't always the case with him, the pitch count looked like he had a chance at a no-hitter, a perfect game, and then in the seventh, it all fell apart. He threw 34 pitches that inning, gave up two runs, lost the no-hitter, lost the shutout, and the Padres lost the game, and man, is this team, it just feels like they're in trouble. I know they're tied with the Reds, for that wild card spot, but they're not going in the right direction.
I was going to ask you, what do you see in the race for the second wild card? And could other teams possibly get involved at some point?
Yeah, you don't want to dismiss the Padres' chances. And this morning at Fangraphs, they still have their odds at 32%. So 1-3. The Reds are at 49.7 with the Phillies about 8.2. The problem with the Padres is the rest of the schedule, and I think we've mentioned this at some point. They have one more game against the Angels, but their last 22 then, 10 against the Giants, 6 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Cardinals, 3 against the Braves, and 16 of those 22 are on the road, where they're 4 games under 500 on the season. That is just a brutal, brutal schedule to finish the season with.
Yeah, I was talking with my son. I took him on a college visit yesterday, and we went through, because he's a Braves fan, and he's like, now, if the Braves don't win the division, do you think they could be in the wild card? And we ran through all the team schedules, and he was the one who, again, pointed out that the Padres' schedule is going to be really difficult coming up. All right, speaking of races, wild card races, I find the American League wild card races to be fascinating, like day by day by day. With everything that's moving along there. First off, the Toronto Blue Jays, I mean, they just look like a freight train, right, these days. And I looked at it, sent out a tweet this morning. If you were to look at the top 5 run differentials in baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays are 5th because they're just bludgeoning teams right now. They crushed the Yankees 2 nights ago. They beat Garrett Cole last night. What do you see in the Blue Jays?
Yeah, 6 in a row, and we've kind of been waiting for them to have a stretch like this. So they're 9-1 over their last 10, because we've seen that run differential all season. A lot of blowout wins, not so great in those one run games. They lost a bunch of extra inning games early in the season. The bullpen has finally kind of settled down. That's, to me, their key, down the stretch here. Can that bullpen hold up? Because we know they can score runs. The rotation with Robbie Ray, we were probably going to get into this. Suddenly, he might be the Cy Young front runner with what happened last night. Steven Matz was great last night. Alec Manoah has been really good since his call-up. So they're clicking, really, for the first time all season in all phases of the game.
And they've got those get-out-of-jail-free cards. They got a weekend series against the Orioles coming up, and then they finish the season against the Orioles. I'd say right now, I mean, given how strong their offense is, given what's going on with Baltimore and its pitching, those two series, it feels like, are going to be cub your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, the schedule, we probably overrate it at times, but it's going to be beneficial for Toronto. And hey, we got to mention Alejandro Kirk, 2 home runs last night. I mean, how can you not love this kid? He can flat out hit. He looks like your IT guy at work, with his build. But man, can this player bash the baseball?
Yeah, and he's part of what is a really deep lineup. They also have all those games left against the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah,
so they're facing 2 of the worst teams in baseball, 2 of the bottom 5 teams in run differential down the stretch. A lot in Baltimore and Minnesota. Garrett Cole walks off in the 4th inning last night. I actually was on a phone call when that happened. I had the sound muted, so it wasn't until after the game that Aaron Boone talks about the nature of his injury. And Aaron immediately said, nope, no MRI. What I felt like, there are a lot of times, as we just talked about with Stefania Bell, where you have front office executives, you don't believe what they're telling you, like Sandy Alderson. When Aaron Boone said what he said last night, I believe what he said, that they feel like that this is a veteran pitcher who's managing some discomfort at some point. I don't know if Garrett Cole is going to be healthy again for the rest of the season, but I think a lot of players are sort of dealing with these nagging injuries this time of year. And this is what Garrett Cole did last night. It was almost like a strategic retreat once they fell behind.
Yeah, that's what you have to hope as you're a Yankee fan. David Cone, I thought, said something very intelligent on the Yankee broadcast last night, saying this is where you have to trust the experienced player, that he knows his body, and that Cole felt something and got out of there as soon as he could, rather than, well, let me try to get through another batter or two and make the injury worse. So if Garrett Cole did diagnose his own injury, so to speak, maybe he, won't miss too much time and maybe makes his next start even.
Well, and boy, a classic example of that was Max Scherzer. Leading up to the trade deadline, he had a tricep thing, and he kept telling reporters, don't worry about it, it's not a big deal. I remember saying, boy, for me, and I talked to executives of other teams who were saying, what is that injury about? What's going on? It's a real fear. Max Scherzer turned out to be exactly right, where he's like, don't worry, I got this. And I think you know, once players get into that stage of their career, they can do that more readily.
Yeah, you wonder too, do you, Buster, look at a player's injury history when you look at these things? Garrett Cole, generally very healthy throughout his career. Max Scherzer's had no major injuries. So you do kind of trust them when they say, I don't think it's a serious deal, because they also don't have a history of going on the injured list.
Yep. And with someone like Garrett Cole, if you were to tell him, look, your hamstring is not going to be right, can you figure out a way to pitch? I think absolutely the answer would be yes.
Yeah.
Like, he would still be out there competing even if he wasn't 100%. I think a lot of these guys, when we get to September, are like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, obviously, the Yankees need him out there for every inning he can give them.
The Red Sox, what are you seeing in those guys now?
Yeah, I haven't liked really what I've seen from them for about 2+ months now. I know they're hanging in there, you know, right behind the Yankees in the wild card race, but Toronto's breathing down their necks. Look, I think Toronto, we just talked about that schedule. They're going to overtake one of those two teams, so they're going to win a wild card spot. So I now think that second one is Yankees, Red Sox. And it's a toss-up. They have one three-game series left later this month. That series could decide that second wild card race. You know, so it's too hard to pick who's going to win that. But to me, it's a coin flip between the Yankees and Red Sox right now.
Later today, we will hear the Hall of Fame induction speeches of Derek Jeter and Larry Walker. And I've been thinking all day that I kind of feel bad for those guys that they're not going to have the full-blown experience. What do you think?
Yeah, no doubt. And I read the Hall of Fame. They're estimating 45,000 to 50,000 fans in attendance, which in a normal summer with Derek Jeter, you got to think there'd be 100,000 plus, right, coming up from New York to see him give his speech. You know, they don't have the Hall of Fame parade this year. So, yeah, it's not going to be the same ceremony that fans and the players normally get. And plus, there's going to be kind of a cloud over it because 10 Hall of Famers have died since the last induction ceremony in 2019. So I know they're going to honor all those guys. So that's going to kind of bring everything down a little bit, you know, as we celebrate the lives of Hank Aaron and Tom Seaver and all those great players who've passed away.
In honor of Derek Jeter, before you go, I want to get to top three moments. To me, it's pretty clear when you go 3, 2, 1. So I wanted you to count it down and I'll tell you whether or not you're right or wrong.
Okay. Well, number three would be what is game winning hit in his last game, right?
You nailed it.
Number two is the flip play. And number one, I was there in the right field bleachers, the Mr. November home run in the 2001 World Series.
Okay, we're going to disagree a little bit. I've got Mr. November being number two. I think the flip play is the iconic play from his career, like the one that, you know, for years and years and years, people will be talking about because of the unusual nature of it. If anybody, you know, goes to ESPN.com today, look for Tim Kirchin. Yeah. Oral history that he collected from Derek Jeter, from Art Howe, from others about that incredible play. So I would have the Mr. November at number two and the flip play at number one.
Okay, I can agree with you there. And there's no doubt the iconic nature of that play. We've never seen any other player make that play. And I think it's fair to say, who else besides Derek Jeter is thinking ahead, you know, two or three steps to be backing up a relay throw like that? And man, I know A's fans are still crying that Jeremy Giambi didn't slide.
Yeah. And I heard something. I don't know. Have you ever heard this story? Matt Biskirchian told us a story on a conference call we had before the Yankees Oakland game. And I think he mentioned it on the broadcast real briefly because I wanted him to tell that story. And I suspect that he probably heard it directly from Eric Burns. That the Athletics were in the process of trying to get Burns in the game as a pinch runner for Jeremy Giambi. He was going to run it first when that play happened. That's what Matt has heard. And I assume because he worked with him that he may have gotten it from Eric Burns. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I had not heard that until a few days ago. Matt mentioned it on a Sunday night game or something, because that was the first time I'd heard of it. Yeah, you wonder if that's just one of those mythological rumors that kind of pops up after the fact. But yeah, it'd be interesting to look at the Oakland roster and try to grasp why they wouldn't have pinch run in that situation. Eric Burns certainly is one of the faster runners in the game at that time.
Yeah, there's so much I love about Tim's oral history today, where there are disagreements about Ramon Hernandez, who was the guy who should have been at home plate, telling Giambi whether to slide or not. According to Art Howe, he asked Ramon Hernandez immediately, did you tell him to slide? And Ramon Hernandez insisted that he did. Ron Washington says he didn't. We've never seen a picture of Ramon Hernandez trying to wave him down. There are disagreements whether or not the Yankees even practiced that play, as Joe Torre yoked after that game. So it's a fun part of history. You have all these people chiming in with their various perspectives.
Yeah, but that's the thing about being in the moment in the playoffs, in a tight, 0-0 game at the time, I think.
It was 2-1 in the Yankees.
2-1.
The lead, yeah.
But what the great players do, they keep their head in the moment, and that's what Jeter did. No, can I imagine they have practiced that? No, because he was backing up two relay guys, right? So why would you be in that spot other than to anticipate that a bad throw could happen? There's no way I can imagine that you'd be practicing that play at any point. So just the most heads up play that any of us have ever seen on a baseball field.
Exactly. All right, Dave, thanks for doing this.
You bet.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Embiid, he's a researcher for ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He says he's a honcho, head honcho. We've been digging into that for the last couple of years. Hembo, look, there's so much fascinating. It feels like every day now, day by day developments in all these races, moments that you feel like are really crucial. Yesterday, we saw the Yankees decide to bench Joey Gallo and Gleyber Torres. What do you got on Joey Gallo?
Well, Buster, I have to say, you called it. When the Yankees traded for Joey Gallo, you said on the air, I'm not sure that he's a good fit for this market because of his swing and miss and what that could create with the fans. Well, so far he's played 35 games with the team. His 61 strikeouts since being traded there leads the major leagues, but that's not a surprise. That's the player that he is. We were told that the walks would make up for it. Well, he's reached base only 44 times over that span. That's tied for 86th in the major leagues during that time. Buster, with the Yankees, he has two multi-hit games and 21 games with multiple strikeouts. And lastly, he has stranded 64 runners since joining the team. That's 14 more than any other player on the team. So you and I both believe that run scoring diversity is a trait that all great teams have. The Yankees don't have it. And obviously Joey Gallo only exacerbates that weakness. And that's something that we knew would likely be the case when they made that trade, and they did it anyway.
Speaking of run scoring diversity, Wander Franco, what about him?
I am amazed at what this kid can do so far. First of all, he's just not overwhelmed by the quality of pitching. He's not taking defensive swings. In fact, he ranks in the 83rd percentile. And my favorite hitting statistic, crush quotient, your statistic, Buster, only, he averages 24 total bases per 100 swings. That is a near elite number, especially for a player his age. Secondly, he is totally unfazed by spin. That's also rare for a player 20 years old. He owns a 988 OPS at at-bats ending on breaking balls. Buster, wow. That ranks fifth among 270 hitters this season with at least 250 plate appearances. Fifth. And lastly, just the fact that he's hitting at the top of the order for the best lineup in the American League is just a ridiculous thing. The last two players, 20 or younger, to hit two or three throughout a postseason are Bryce Harper and Mickey Mantle. This kid is that kind of good.
All right, so I'm gonna spin off on you and surprise you with this question. You have you're an organization, and you had $300 million, and let's say no contracts for these players have been signed. Are you investing in Wander Franco, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., or Vlad Jr.?
Oh. If I had to pick one of those five players, Buster, it would be Juan Soto. And that's because if I'm going to give a player $300 million, I need to be 100% sure that the bat will play for the entire life of the contract. for him, I am 100% certain that that will be the case. But candidly, there's no wrong answer there. And if you ask me a year from now, Wander Franco might have proven enough to where I'd answer him. But I think all five guys have a decent argument.
Oh, yeah. It feels like that you could, you know, day by day, you could go back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
The reason why I brought it up was because Wander Franco is a shortstop, right? I agree. Look, Juan Soto is the most, I think, refinedly developed among those five hitters that we just laid out. But the thing is, it feels like Wander Franco might be in a couple of years where Soto was 2 years ago.
Maybe so. I'm not convinced that he'll be able to stay at shortstop given how bulky his lower half is. That's a little more on the scouting side of things. But there is just no question that he – look, compare him to another sort of uber prospect, Jared Kelnick. Jared Kelnick's getting this all these breaking pitches. He's not able to do hardly anything. Like his, you know, control of the strike zone is not there, and his ability to drive the baseball isn't there either, like we saw in the minor leagues. Franco's playing, like you said, in the middle infield, doing all of that stuff almost right from the get-go. It's so hard to be good that young right away, and he's doing it. And I think Kelnick struggles, who we both think is going to be a star, I think even more illuminate that for Franco.
What do you got on Marcus Semien, who's having the best one-year bet on himself than anybody?
That's exactly right. So a fun note that I came across this morning is that yesterday he became the first player in baseball history to record at least 75 extra base hits in a season, both as a shortstop and as a second baseman, which is a fun little note. But more so, we act like this is a kind of a new thing in him sort of exploding this season. It is absolutely not. If you look at the wins above replacement leaderboard, Buster, since 2019, over the last three seasons, he's first for Baseball Reference, first on Fangraphs, and first on Baseball Prospectus. Three of the most reputable places we have to search this stuff say he has been baseball's most valuable player over the last three seasons. That is unprecedented kind of production. And you very rarely see that kind of thing across the board too. He's a fairly anonymous player who's now done it on two different teams and at two different positions. He's a freaking superstar. And it's about time we start talking about him like that.
Yeah. Can you send me those notes and I'll explain why later in an email? Okay.
No problem.
All right. And yesterday we talked about the National League Cy Young Award race and how it feels like it's kind of going back and forth. I know when I, you know, was getting ready to do Sunday Night Baseball and we had Walker Buehler on the mound, you know, the conversation was, it looks like it's between Walker Buehler and Corbin Burnes. We talked about Zach Wheeler and then Walker Buehler got beaten up and then Max Scherzer pitched great on Monday. And we talked about him being part of the race. And then I got the feeling from afar, you're watching all that, you're listening to that and going, shut up.
That's exactly right. I put a pin in that conversation, Buster, because as I heard you agonizing over that debate, I thought to myself, this is not a debate at all. The answer to this question is easy. The best pitcher in the National League by a long shot is Corbin Burnes, and I'll tell you why. So fielding independent pitching, FIP, removes results on batted balls, and it isolates what pitchers control, strikeouts, walks, hit batsmen, and home runs. You know this. Burnes owns a FIP right now, Buster, of 1.58 since World War II. That was a long time ago. Only Pedro Martinez has posted a lower mark over a full season. But I think the most impressive part of Corbin Burnes' resume this year is his home run avoidance in today's climate. Buster, he's faced 569 batters this season. He has allowed five home runs. There are 43 qualified pitchers in baseball right now, aside from Burnes, of course. None of them have allowed fewer than 11. His ability to keep the ball in the ballpark, he also owns the lowest opponent OPS at something like 550. Like when you face Corbin Burnes all the way up and down your lineup, you're hardly doing better than your pitcher batting against him. He has been utterly dominant this season. And that dominance may supersede any of the innings volume or batter's face volume that Walker Buehler or Zach Wheeler have over him. To me, he's been that kind of good.
Yeah. And that would be the, you know, the difference for a guy like a Zach Wheeler or a Walker Buehler or, you know, in the end, Max Scherzer, because Corbin Burnes looks like he's going to wind up with significantly fewer innings than those guys. He leads the majors in strikeout to walk ratio 7-1 this year. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. Wow. Just blanked out here there on what day it was. The Mariners hive was out under hashtag Bleacher Tweets yesterday. Eric Sorensen writes in at Coach Sorensen 9. Eric says, come on, Buster, quit hating on our teams. Hashtag Mariners. He brings up a couple points here. Number one, Scott Service for AL Manager of the Year. Obviously. Number two, can't completely count out the Mariners, right? Tough schedule ahead, but everyone they need to beat is on the schedule. Then Mike Mosk, the Mosk 3, followed up. Injuries, COVID, and bad baseball have the Sox and Yanks scrambling. Is it possible both miss the playoffs and Toronto and Seattle get in?
Yes, it is possible. Fangraphs is giving this morning the Mariners a 4.6% chance of making the postseason. The Blue Jays' chances up to 36.9%. I would say the Mariners win a couple more games. The Yankees lose a couple more games in standings. Those numbers will change a lot.
Let's go, Mariners. Let's go to David Skaggs at David Skaggs 37. David writes in, hey, Buster, has a team's infield ever swept the Silver Slugger Award? Could the Braves do it this year?
They could. I do think Fernando Tatis Jr. might throw a wrench into all that. Dansby Swanson has had a real surge here in the second half, but Fernando Tatis Jr., he's going to be, at the end of the year, his position in the Silver Slugger Award, it's going to be shortstop, and it's hard to see anybody catching him there.
Last one for the day, Elizabeth Hart at eHart tweets. Elizabeth writes in, if Gerrit Cole goes on the IL and misses significant time, is the AL Cy Young Robbie Ray's?
Elizabeth, I think you're right. I think Robbie Ray would step into the forefront if Gerrit Cole missed a lot of time. I don't think Garrett's going to miss much time.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Stefania, to Dave, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.